Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week, we'll be talking about the National Braille Press, some of the services and resources that they offer, and some of the new initiatives that they're involved in.
The National Braille Press promotes the literacy of blind children through Braille and also provides access to information that empowers blind people of all ages to actively engage in work, family, and community affairs. Before we get started, we'd like to welcome the listeners of the Radio Eye Reading Service in Lexington, Kentucky, who just started receiving Eyes on Success, and we're glad to have you as new listeners.
And for those new listeners, you may want to go to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net, to find out about some of the other resources we have there and ways that you can connect with us and other listeners.
And among other things, since you just picked up the show, you can access any of the over 200 shows in our archive very simply and listen to whatever back shows on whatever topics you might be interested in. Turning now to our tip of the week. This week's tip is literacy is very important, and make sure that you choose the right medium for each type of thing that you want to read or write. For some of those applications, the best choice will be Braille.
And it's good to have a diversity of methods for accessing material, but the National Braille Press, of course, focuses on Braille as yet another option and sometimes even a better way for people to access material. So it's nice to have choices, and it's nice that someone is fostering the use of Braille.
Let's start by meeting Brian McDonald and learning about the mission of the National Braille Press.
This is Brian McDonald, president of National Braille Press in Boston.
And you've been on our show before. Can you tell a little bit about what your organization does and your mission?
Sure. Well, National Braille Press is a nonprofit. We've been around, this is our 88th year and going strong. Our mission at National Braille Press is to provide high quality, affordable Braille materials, and to leverage innovative technologies that support Braille literacy for children and for adults. To make it a little more generic, I always like to say the National Braille Press provides the tools and solutions to access information in Braille, and certainly that can empower blind people to, you know, actively be involved in work, activities, family, and their community, and so forth. But it's really all about us trying to find better ways to support Braille learning, Braille literacy, adults in the workplace, and having access to information in an affordable way.
And that seems to be a major topic of discussion these days in many blindness communities about Braille literacy and the fact that a lot of young people aren't learning Braille these days. So it's good to see that someone is championing that effort.
Yes, and it's not just us, of course. All the major organizations around the world, too, realize that the shifts and changes over the past 30 or 40 years really did have a huge decline in Braille. And technology was that double-edged sword of being told when people were younger, oh, you don't need Braille anymore. You have talking books, talking computers, this and that. And the impact was really significant.
And we have heard from so many of the other guests that we've had on the show what an impact being able to read and write in Braille has had on their lives.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is some of the products and services available from the National Braille Press that they deliver in carrying out their mission.
So let's talk a little bit more specifically about some of the services and resources that you do offer to people. I know myself, we've availed ourselves of some of your services and resources over the years, including your Children's Braille Book Club, where you make print Braille books at an affordable price. So we shared many of those with our children. I know you made many manuals for computers. That's how I learned programming C from the Kernighan and Ritchie Braille books. I used that for many years as a reference material. And just give us a summary of some of the other things that you do.
Of course. Well, again, tying into the whole literacy effort we do, we start with the very basics, which one of our programs is called Bumpy Basics, for very young blind or low vision children that really want to get acclimated and used to the concept of bumps, you know, large braille bumps being something that correlates to reading and literacy. If you think about it, a sighted child gets exposed to letters every day and billboards and seeing their parents read and letters and TV and all this stuff. And for a blind child, they don't get that exposure tactily with braille necessarily unless the parents are really supporting it early on. And we're trying to help with that effort. So we start with that, and then we, as you said, we go right into the Children's Braille Book Club as kind of a next phase of Braille literacy for us. And just to add a little plug, this is our 30th anniversary of the Children's Braille Book Club, which is amazing. And we celebrated this year, and we actually started a new program that correlates with that called Great Expectations, which is kind of the next phase of multi-sensory, web-based as well support for making books that really bring picture books to life for blind children.
And how does that work?
It's more of a whole, as I said, multisensory, but also a guide for parents to really learn how to take songs, tactile play, picture descriptions, how to do that. It involves body movement, engaged listening, so that a traditional picture book that a sighted child would see all these images that are very funny and so forth. We now are trying to teach parents to have a better way of describing those pictures, talk about feelings from images in the book, and then have interactive things that we create with this program, such as songs that are written with the book and tactile play and activities that are supported on the web or on a tablet or on your phone even, you know, whatever it works for the parents wherever they are, to make a really full sensory experience about making reading really come to life in a more engaged and active way. The first book we did was called Dragons Love Tacos, which was a New York Times bestseller. And we've added all kinds of activities. It's really been popular and a lot of fun. And it's on our website now for people to look it up. But you can see all the types of activities that can be part of that program. It's really fun.
Those print braille books are great. And not only great for the sighted parent of a blind child, but as in our case, for a blind parent of a sighted child, so that the sighted child could read along with the print and daddy was able to participate in reading bedtime stories and helping the kids learn to love reading.
That is so true. And we get so many stories and testimonials today, even from now grandparents reading, you know, to their grandchildren, you know, that are blind, reading to their sighted grandchildren. It's the same thing. It's just so much fun. So it's really been nice to see these generational experience after 30 years of doing them.
Oh, we have saved this entire bookshelf in the hopes that we too become grandparents, and then grandpa will be able to read to the kids.
We've talked a lot about the resources that you have available in Braille for youngsters, but I know you also make a lot of material available for adults and professionals.
We still continue to make lots of technology books, and we think the demand is very large, of course, because of today's changes in the world. But we really enjoy doing them. We think we have great authors that are blind that know how to do it and write clearly, and we're coming out with two more ones very soon. Learning to Use the Mac with iOS 8 is coming out within the month. And then we have another iPhone iOS 8 version coming out with Anna Dresner within about 2 months. So we keep on churning those out as well. We think they're very helpful. We're working on an Android app one coming out this year as well. So lots of that's still going on.
And then you also offer a range of other material like cookbooks, poetry books, and lots of other reading material.
Oh, absolutely. And we're also trying to bridge those age gaps, too. We just did a book on Christine Ha.
The cook.
I think it was Master Chef was the name of the program. And we just did her book. I mean, it's great to talk about early readers for Braille, but we also want to engage much more with the middle school and teenage years, too. And we won two awards this year. The IBBY IBBY Award for Stir It Up, a cookbook for kids to learn how to start cooking, and an out-of-sight science experiment book, which was really popular. So those areas we're trying to just keep a continuity of ages going through that have material to read. So that's fun.
Now, you alluded to a little bit earlier how the digital revolution has really changed how people want to access their reading material. Can you talk a little bit about how that's modified your approach to getting material to people?
Of course. If you think about it, certainly newspapers and magazines have been struggling for years with this whole change to the digital world and how to have a business model that works right. And in our case, certainly the challenges are multiple because First of all, we have to give credit to Apple and the iPhone for being so accessible out of the box. It's really made a huge difference to blind people, I think. At the same time, though, the access to information had become a lot more audio for most people, because let's be honest, technology for refreshable braille is still really expensive, and most people can't afford that. So audio becomes more of a default. And that even happens in schools in some cases when it shouldn't. So as much as there's still demand for paper braille, and we obviously make millions of pages of braille every year, I can certainly tell you that over the last 20 or 30 years, that production rate has gone down as far as paper braille. And we want to keep it alive because we think it is so important for the development of literacy and for success in employment. And there's challenges to it.
And what's the National Braille Press doing to address the change to digital?
We're now trying to look at the technology pieces of it to keep Braille alive in much more digital ways, trying to find a real affordable solution for technology, low-cost Braille devices that can do refreshable Braille still, but also finding digital apps that can encourage learning Braille on a phone or on a tablet or whatever the case may be. I mean, if you think about it, Peter and Nancy, if you look at the world today with over 6 billion people in this world, 86% of them have access to mobile phones. More people have access to phones than toilets in the world today.
It's an interesting statistic.
I know. And if we can capitalize on leveraging technologies like that in third world countries and developing countries, that blind children can have access to learning Braille and having even tactiles that can be done on phones in a different way, it can really make a difference for universal design and for really reinjecting a steroids into the Braille world, you know, and so we're trying to look at those areas as well.
So we actually took a tour of the National Braille Press, and it must have been about 15 years ago, and at the time you had converted lithographic presses that you used for doing your Braille printing on paper. Are you still using the same type of presses, or has the digital age changed that?
We still have three of the Heidelberg presses you mentioned, Nancy. However, we do have two. We just, in fact, just received another one a month ago that is a high-quality, new technology Braille embosser from Norway, the Braillo company. And so we're using both. We believe both is still a necessity because if we do a very large job, the Heidelbergs are the fastest Braille presses in the world. The new versions that are embossers are good. They're not as fast. They do collate automatically and help in some labor ways. So the need is still there. But yes, we do have high technology, web-based, cloud-based, all kinds of activities that can be put into new devices. But we still need the old as well.
Now, with mobile phones being so ubiquitous and tablets and electronic documents, you said that that changed how you had to engage the blind community and distribute your material. What specifically have you done to work in that realm?
Well, we're looking at technologies now that can integrate, as I said, in that third world case of having universal designs with apps. And I think, you know, when we talk about the B2G, we will talk about that in a few minutes, it is Android-based because it's open source and it also provides access for a lot of apps that can be created quickly and effectively worldwide because of the growth of the Android market like that. So we are certainly doing a few things to look at technology for the future of Braille. One is partnering with a number of universities and researchers to find solutions to really make affordable solutions for Braille that are digital and as a consumer electronic.
And what would be an example of that?
One good example is Disney, where we're working with Disney Research in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they are working with us through our Braille experiences and our blind experiences to create a tablet for the blind that can actually feel graphics, raised graphics on a glass tablet, on a surface like that. I don't know if you've ever heard of this or not, but it's called electrostatic haptics.
And how does that technology work?
On a traditional phone or tablet, when you touch it, it reads the capacitance from your finger to know to open an icon. In this case, what Disney is doing is making a method where there's this conductive layer on the tablet or phone, and when you put a voltage through it, it doesn't put a current through your finger, but it changes the friction forces as you move your finger across that surface. So it tricks your finger to feel height and textures that aren't really there. IBM did this, they always call it five and five, the five technologies that will change the world in 5 years. And one of them was touch. And Robin Schwartz from IBM said, within 5 years, you'll be able to use your phone or tablet and go online and feel the silk material or the type of fabric you want in Italy to know if it's the texture you want by feeling your phone before you order it, because the quality and resolution will be that good.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Have you been able to try one of these displays personally?
I went to the Disney Lab in Pittsburgh to visit them, and they let me play with some of this technology. And the simplest example I could give you is they showed a picture on a tablet of looking out a window panes from a house at a snow scene with a tree and a farm and all this. The window panes are all frosted with frost. He showed it to me. I said, oh, cool, I'm going to feel frost, you know, on the screen. And sure enough, you could feel that resolution of all the texture of like the snowflakes to it and all that. And it was like, wow, this is really cool. And then he says, well, rub it and melt it. So you rub your finger on it, and sure enough, it starts feeling slippery, like it's wet, you know, and you can actually literally see through it better because you're, you know, making it melt kind of to look through the window pane.
Wow.
And there's no obviously cold or anything like that, but the feeling of it, the sensation of it was really interesting. So I, you know, right away said, well, gee, what's your resolution? Can you do Braille dots, you know? And the answer was no. Yes, you can do the resolution to that, but because it's done currently on a grid underneath that layer, if you put dot one for A, it will repeat across the screen. So they haven't designed it to do Braille yet, but it has the capability to do Braille.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that kind of technology is really exciting and interesting. And that's why we're working with Disney to try and see what it can really do from a digital graphic output point of view.
What other novel technologies are you working with?
I was just at MIT Tuesday. I can't say too much about it, but MIT has actually created a material there that isn't even named yet. But what I will tell you is that it's a new material that acts like a shape memory alloy, where it can withstand 1,000 degrees Celsius. It has 1,000 times the force of a traditional piezoelectric bender that would be used in a Braille dot in note takers today, which means it could theoretically be 1,000 times smaller as far as its capability and power requirements. So it's really amazing what they're working on. They want to work with us to make a graphic display for the blind.
That would be nice to see.
Yeah. There's a lot of amazing new technologies coming out there that have all kinds of applications. In that case, it could be, you know, in engines and airplane jet engines, and there's military applications, all kinds of different things it could be used for, but it certainly could be used for this too. So I'm really excited that they're just been working for this. So that's really, really great.
Now for this week's final item, the National Braille Press's lightweight, portable Android device that they call B2G. So you've been talking about all sorts of novel technologies to enable Braille reading, and we know you've been working on the B2G device. Can you talk about that a bit?
I can. It's like the phantom that's been talked about for 4 years, because that's how long we've been working on it. The B2G, B number 2G, is kind of a little acronym for Braille to Go. We've raised $1 million to develop the B2G, and we've spent $1 million to develop the B2G, which is, you know, not uncommon. And we finally have the money to do production for it.
Is this a note taker or a phone, or what exactly is the B2G?
The B2G is unique. Yes, it is a note taker, but it also does have a phone card in it. We made everyone have this phone card that can do either CGMA or GSM phones. So you don't have to make it your phone, but it's already built in. And if you want it, you know, we're working with Verizon. I'll put a plug that Verizon accepted us in their Verizon Innovation Program. So we're actually partnering with their engineers, and they will help us with testing with the B2G as a phone, as a text and cellular device. So that they actually help us fund us with their research labs to do testing in all different types of conditions, and then for certifications, not just with Verizon, but ultimately for FCC and things like that. So it has a phone, it is a note taker, but it's more than that, because it's a powerful processing computer as well, with lots of memory and features built in. So it's kind of a broad adaptation to make many devices come into one at the same time.
So back to the telephone feature. I've seen a picture of this on your website. How do you do the audio in and audio out?
It has the capability to be Bluetooth with a headset as a phone. So you can have you just like you do with any cell phone, have a Bluetooth earpiece. It does have a microphone at the front of it. So you could have it as a speakerphone and do that as well. But I envision most people that do want it as a phone would have it on a wireless Bluetooth headset.
So while we're at it, can you describe the rest of the physical object?
Sure. It's very simple. The one thing that we wanted was a very simple device. So we made a conscious decision to have a Braille keyboard for input. We didn't want to have a QWERTY keyboard because we really wanted to encourage, you know, students and adults to use Braille all the time. So we could have a QWERTY keyboard, but we said first generation, let's not. By the way, it's an 8 Braille keyboard, not 6. On the right side of it, there's a simple on-off switch. It's a physical switch to turn it on. And there's a volume, 2 buttons for up and down volume that you physically press up and down, and you'll hear like music scale going dun, 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 dun as you turn up the volume. On the left side, there's ports. You have a traditional input for AV for like a teacher to have to see on a screen what the student would be studying or not. And then there's also a micro USB, regular USB port as well. And as I said, there's a microphone also built into the front of it with 2 stereo speakers on the left and right edges of the front. On the back, there's an SD, a traditional standard SD card slot where you can do downloads or quick backups if you want. Internally, there is a case on the bottom that you slide open for a micro SD card is in there, I mean. And the phone card is accessible there too that you have. And there is a regular SIM card for a traditional phone as well if you were doing it that way.
How big is the device?
It's not really big. It's about 7 inches wide from left to right, about maybe 4 inches deep, and about 1 inch high. It's almost the size of a Nexus 7 tablet, only thicker, of course. And it weighs about 19 and a half ounces.
And how many cells on the Braille display?
It's 20 cells. We put a lot of time into that when we did the initial design. We felt that that was a good compromise. Obviously, for those who are doing lots of math and stuff, you want at least 32 cells or 40 cells for complex equations and things like that. But we were really trying to balance portability and size with functionality. So we did a lot of consumer testing and discussions and surveys with people, and we compromised at 20 cells as this kind of well-rounded position of a device.
And how does the user interact with this device?
What we're doing is obviously mimicking command sets of chord keys and shortcuts that people use in other note takers so that there's not huge learning curves. So we have things like, you know, for saving a document and, you know, going back or forward, things like that. But we have a navigation key on the front for surfing the web that has a square keyboard of up, down, left, right with a dome in the middle for enter. And we have a forward and back button. We have cursor router buttons on the Braille keyboard for editing and things like that. And it's a very simple layout. And we wanted it simple so there aren't too many buttons to overwhelm people, and it's easy to, you know, get assimilated with.
I assume it ships with a charging device and a carrying case?
Right. We have earbuds charging device. It's standard micro USB charger. There's nothing proprietary about this device. I mean, you can use your iPhone earbuds or anything you want to plug into it. So any micro USB charger will work with this too, but yes, we are sending one with it, of course. We're trying to make it as universal as we can, you know, so that's really important to us.
And you mentioned that it's a note taker as well as a computer. Does this mean you can download apps from the Android Play Store?
Well, here's where we're at. The answer will be yes, we hope. Now, so this is where Google has been helpful. We've been working with Google for 4 years. They've invited us to their Google I.O. conference every year and given us a booth to meet with developers as well. And they've been really helpful to us in a lot of ways. And there is a compatibility test suite you have to go through to be certified as a Google product. And there's 17,600 tests that you go through for your device to be certified. So we took a quick crack at that and had it done. And we missed 30 out of 17,600. But what we didn't do, though, which the device we had tested didn't have the camera in it yet. So there were a lot of them that related to a camera that we didn't tell it no camera. So we failed on things that weren't there. So our engineers and stuff feel really confident that we'll pass. But if it does pass and it's certified, then you can use the Play Store to download apps and surf the web and add and change your device any way you want. we're trying to give freedom and independence of any age group to tail this device the way they want to have it. From a young reader that, you know, is fortunate enough to have one, to middle school, to college, or adult in the workplace. There's certain things you want on it. You can change your home screen to have the apps that you use frequently. You can add or delete apps that you do or don't want. We're going to have the Google Suite, you know, like the calendar, the clock, the Google Maps, and Google Books, all the things that they have, we would have to have on it if we're certified. I don't want to load up a device. You know, I don't want to have all the stuff over there. It's just clutter. But we want you to be aware of how to download, how to choose, and how to get rid of things you don't want, you know? So it really can be what you want it to be. And that's really important to me in today's world.
Boy, that is so true. Everybody wants their device just the way they want it.
As you mentioned, this has been a long time in the development. And I know there's been a lot of frustrations and you wanted to get this out a lot earlier, but it sounds like it's finally almost here. When will people actually be able to get one in their hands?
I hope that's very soon. We've been doing a lot of testing on a new revised board with more memory, and we're finalizing the editor to make sure that that works as functionally as we want it to be. And that's always going to evolve, but we want a really good editor in there. And we want to, you know, go one more round on looking at apps that we wanted to include that are important or not, so that we're ready to go. So I'm hoping to have this ready by, you know, in the very near future, this time right now, a month or two, I hope. We'll see.
Great. So if people want to find out more about the National Braille Press or more about the B2G, where should they go?
The website will always be one resource.
And the URL?
The URL is nbp.org. People call me every week because people are anxious to have it get out there. So I'm not adverse to people calling if they want to get updates too with our people live at NBP. And I can be emailed. My email is also available at bmacdonald@nbp.org. So it's bmacdonald@nbp.org.
And the phone number?
Our phone number is 617-266-6160.
And as usual, if you didn't catch that information, all of that information and the contact info you heard will be available in the show notes associated with this show at our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. In addition, in the show notes, you'll find a link to a previous episode of Eyes on Success where we interviewed Brian McDonald at the CSUN conference.
That's it for show number 1513. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about beep baseball. And the following week, we'll be talking about blind cricket. Even if you're blind, you can still play baseball or cricket. We will speak with Blake Boudreau and Stephen Guerra of the National Beep Baseball Association about how the game is played, how it differs from standard baseball, and how people can get involved. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success or Twitter @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.